from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper. You are Live from the Path.
Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. Hey, Nathaniel, I'm going to tell you this. Nathaniel sent an article about a church tokenizing itself. Bova, you're chewing gum real loud.
I don't know what that means.
A church tokenizing itself?
Yeah. So,
like Bitcoin?
Yes. Essentially, so taking a real world asset, like a piece of property or share stock or whatever, tokenizing it, converting it into a digital asset.
And, okay.
But the guy, I think the guy doesn't understand how it works. I was reading this article, and it was a pastor, and the description the pastor gave was, I was praying, the Lord said, get the building. Take back my home or something. I don't know. It was an old church that someone was using as something else. And tokenize it is the word.
That's what he got from the Lord?
He says, I'm going to tokenize it. But tokenizing is not free money. It's not like you take an asset you have and then all of a sudden it's a digital asset and now you own two assets. It's a digital representation of the asset. And so what's unique about it is you might be able to say have a church building and there's a digital representation to it and multiple people could own it. Like you could own bits and pieces of it.
Yep, like a stock.
Yeah, kind of. But you can, without all the formalities of stock ownership or something like that.
I'm going to hold you up. I don't understand Bitcoin at all. I don't understand digital currency in the least.
I don't either.
Yeah, I mean, it's a currency that's not owned or backed by any kind of governmental body and or legitimate gold backing or something like that, like most governmental currencies are, right?
Yeah.
And it's not held in a bank.
Well, yeah, so primarily the belief is that everybody manipulates their currency in some way or another, right? China's particularly nefarious about it, Russia as well. But the United States also manipulates its own currency. It just does it through means of which we approved.
Right, yes.
We're like, oh, it's not worth as much. Raise the rates. So the thought was that, at the end of the day, it's hard to tell what real value is because everyone's putting on a puppet show. And so if we all kind of just agreed in a digital currency – there's a finite, Bitcoin is an example, there's a finite amount. You can't print more. The United States prints more money all the time and devalues the currency. Bitcoin is a finite thing. And so anyway, that's the point
But who decides that? Mr. Bitcoin?
Yes, there was a dude they don't know who it is. They have some guesses on who it is, who basically created this.
Mysterious dude creates a currency backed by nothing.
He was just tired of currencies that existed within banking
systems. I have 700 Dan bucks. And they're like, what's a Dan buck worth?
And enough people agreed. Enough people agreed to it, and it became a crowdfunded kind of thing where people are like, I'm going to back this with my own
insurance. It's like a thing that doesn't do anything, but we pay money for it.
Our currency meant something at one point in time based off an amount of gold that the United States had. That's what it was backed by and something. So this is essentially has value because of the willingness that the people who are buying into it are willing to say it has a certain value amount that's not backed by any governmental system, and it's not backed or held by any banking system. And the finite amount of Bitcoin, the other crazy thing about it was they would release a certain amount into the market of Bitcoin, but it had to be mined by computers, and these computers had to be able to...
What does that even mean?
Basically, these computers had to solve these logarithmic problems. And it was only done by computers, and they had to run these programs for a long period of time to be able to crack these codes
so
that there
ridiculous.
Was any level of Bitcoin that was released and allowed. And people would freak out when a Bitcoin became available on the market because it was more currency flooding the market.
Because a computer sci-fi.
Yeah, one Bitcoin was at one point in time going for $700,000, if I remember correctly. It got insane at how expensive
they even
were.
Now it's $45,000 or something like that. Yeah.
That's why people mine Bitcoin.
Stop. I'm gonna re-explain what you just told me, and you're gonna tell me where I'm understanding this right. Somebody made up a currency; it's worth nothing. They convinced a bunch of other people that it's worth something. As long as everybody agrees that it's worth something, now it's worth something. If you want more of it, you got to set computers to solve algorithmic functions, and it will eventually poop out one more of these things, of which people will then fight over.
But Mike, remember, our banknotes were based off of the value that people put on gold, didn't have any inherent value.
The gold was real.
Right, but it was still something that we created a value system around.
Well, hold on. But we dissolved the gold standard. So like your
that's true, yes.
So your description is exactly what the United States currency is.
But the United States is backed by the good faith and credit of the United
Which
States.
Which is yes.
Its ability to run an economic system.
Yeah,
sure.
This not a mysterious
system,
dude.
The Danbucks are basically supported by a bunch of people that go, I have 800 Danbucks. I also have 800 Danbucks. Okay, sweet. Together we have 1,600 Danbucks.
Can you buy bread with Danbucks?
Yeah.
In some places you can. Actually, really? There's some countries of which like you can use Bitcoin to interchange it. Now, the United States it's an economic policy problem. But like whether they want to get into that, they started coming with their own digital currency. But the problem is it doesn't solve the issue of like government manipulation. It is so that this is actually where they get blockchain. So you do blockchain so that you can actually track. There's like a ledger that everybody has, so that you can't manipulate the currency and stuff. There's transparency in all the transactions in the system and stuff. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. The point is the guy trying to sell his church does not understand it. Based upon his description, what he thinks is going to happen is not going to happen. He's going to be like, oh, I raised $2.5 million to buy the church, but in reality, he sold his church among a bunch of people totaling $2.5 million.
Wait, so that's what I'm saying. It's like if they're like, this is $2.5 million, I'm like, all right, I'll just get a bunch of Danbucks. And then I'll be like, hey, how much are these Danbucks worth in relation to actual money? They're like, no, it's the
No.
They'd have to agree to the exchange rate. Who sets the exchange rate?
It runs by supply and demand. Like the demand, when more people want Bitcoin, the price of Bitcoin goes up.
So if I sell to the world, like these Danbucks are great, and even though they're not worth a fig Newton, I'm like, I got all these Danbucks, and people are like, that guy's right. We got to have more. And then I sell the Danbucks for actual currency?
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
you can convert.
And now, people pay.
But here's what I want you to take away, though. Your description that seems so ridiculous is how the stock market works.
How we work.
Is how the currency in every country works.
No.
Yes.
That's not true at all.
Yes.
100% how our, especially global currency and the concept of exchange rates between one country to another.
Look,
it's all just promises and wishes.
You guys drank the well water is what happened. You
like Bitcoin.
You're following around.
I also own no Bitcoin.
Yeah,
Does anyone own Bitcoin? Steve,
6.
You got any Bitcoin?
Yeah. Did you have $45,000 laying around at one point in time and went, I'd like one Bitcoin, please?
I've got no Bitcoin, and I'm asking the interwebs. I'm asking the man, ChatGTP, to explain Bitcoin in two sentences.
What did it come up with?
It says, Bitcoin is a decentralized digital currency that allows peer-to-peer transactions over the internet without the need for a central authority like a bank. It uses blockchain technology, secure and record transactions, making them transparent and I don't know that last word.
Yeah. Okay. It looks very big.
Yeah.
So Boov and I took 800 sentences.
Yeah.
But we still explained it relatively correctly.
It sound like a lie, the whole thing.
Can we have a new segment where we just explain some level of like new technology or the way the world works in some ways to Mike every week and just watch his reaction to it? What the heck's an NFT? I don't understand a non-fungible token.
Don't know what that means.
Let's
either.
Say we have.
AI, what's a non-fungible token?
If we have decided we have 1,000 Danbucks in this room,
sure,
and it's controlled by the five of us,
and
then we decide, Troy's, Booba's Danbucks are not worth anything. We can just decide that.
No,
because it's still a Danbuck that you agree to a level of value on.
But I can't.
It's not just because it's
not real,
my
so I can't
ownership.
Decide.
Okay, so here's an example, Dan, is that in that situation, if we had everybody had 100, okay, so we got 500 Danbucks in here, you would not be willing to pay real money for Mike's Danbucks because you know you made it up, right?
Right.
Yes.
But Boova might go, you know, I get that we made it up. But like, I actually think that it's going to catch on, and that the people in society will want it. And so, you know what? I'd be willing to give you 50 cents for your 100 Danbucks, and you'd be like, "Sweet, 50 cents," because this is a made up currency.
Yep.
But now there's a going rate where someone's willing to pay 50 cents for some Danbucks, and some other guy goes, "You know what? I'd be willing to pay. I actually think this thing's going to catch on too." And then now there's a demand for it, and people are willing to. They're buying into a promise as a belief that this will actually be exchanged for goods and services, which is happening in other countries.
This is how Mormonism started.
And I now own 200 Dan bucks, and you've got none.
Someone made up magic underpants and got a bunch of people to believe it, and now Mormonism
is catching
on. And
Dan's going to go, I wish I had to hold on to my Dan bucks.
And one entity can't just go in and go, well, got to print more Dan bucks.
Right, because it can't. The 500 that were in this room, that's it.
So anybody could issue a cryptocurrency.
Oh, yes, and there are a million of
yes.
them.
Yes. Bitcoin was the first one. There's yes, like a bunch of them. There's like Dogecoin. Totally there's all kinds of stuff.
Life in the past, cryptos.
We could do we could do an LFT Pcoin.
We have up to 7 listeners.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, we could do Dan bucks. It is a thing.
Would be fun.
We could do Dan bucks. It would not even be that hard.
Okay, I'll look in to see what it's going to take to launch a cryptocurrency.
I'll buy 100.
It's no problem.
You feel like really old-time ancient folks are having the same conversation about gold? Like, what am I going to do with this? What am I supposed to do with this?
Well, yeah.
I can't eat it.
Exactly.
I gotta melt it.
It's the same thing. It's just an agreed-upon standard. Sure. Because you would say, oh, but it's tangible. Tangible for what? Like
it just was an
Steve's
amount
point,
that you could transfer with.
You can't use you can't put it into a tool. You've played Minecraft. It's soft. It doesn't do any good.
It's horrible. This is the worst axe ever.
You like the look of my gold, and you're willing to trade 300 tons of salt for it. Right. And then across the world, it became a commodity because people were like, wow, that's precious. Same with purple being royal. It was because it was an expensive dye that you had to have.
It's a elitist standard, to be honest with you.
100% is. And people went, great, I'm willing to trade certain things for that because it looks nice, and that's the only thing I have in this world is fineries. And therefore,
gold.
It became such a thing that it was a global currency backing standard.
Right. Tulips.
Okay, now, you're listening to Life with the Path. Here's you can invest in Bitcoin and love Jesus, but you should think about it.
What a world of
That's
lies.
That's what Mike's getting at. I need you to know that, like, everything is like that. You've just chosen Bitcoin as if it's the newfound person on the block. But, like, the whole finance system works
now,
this
listen,
way.
There is a distinct difference between things I can hold and things I can't. And I can't hold a blockchain.
That's right. You look at this paper, this printed green paper.
It goes
cheap
to true
paper,
value. Look at a chain. Is this the blockchain?
It's got a 100 on it. You go, I'm rich. I can hold it.
Listen to me. If someone said, hey, I'll give you $100, and I say, produce it, and they'll show it to me, and I'm like, okay, we can do
this. They show you an account
if
on their
phone. Say, give me 100 Bitcoin, then they can, what? Well, they just show me some.
You got a lot of money if
I showed
Bitcoin.
You my bank account. And you saw a number on there, you trust that it means something,
no,
right?
No, I do not.
Okay, hold on. You're going about this the wrong way. Mike, you ever use that debit card? Mike.
Valid point.
I've read a debit.
You should not have said it that way at all, but okay.
Let's talk about these mythical ones and zeros that are buying cigarettes and coconuts somewhere.
Well,
hey, do you accept this piece of plastic that I keep in the leather that's in my back pocket? Fantastic. I'm going to swipe it into your machine, not see anything change except for accepted is on the screen. Fantastic. Can I have my Smokey Joe's now? And then walk out of the place with a promise to them that you had the thing in your account that said they could take the thing in your account that meant what, Mike?
All right, I've been bested. I understand the argument now.
All right, you're listening live from the path. Okay, similar.
Can we please do NFTs next week?
Okay, so Boova's got an Ask the Pastor.
I sure do.
And I think based upon the topic of the Ask the Pastor, it's going to follow into a segment that, I mean, I thought of this 2 seconds before I stepped in the door. But you remember that, what book is it in where Paul goes, he goes, hey, this is the thing the Lord said. And then he goes, this is a thing. It's not from the Lord.
Corinthians.
Okay. For the first one?
Six, seven, eight, nine.
Okay. First Benintians.
First Benintians. Second hesitations.
This has been things that the Lord didn't say, but Ben mentioned, but kind of in the same context of things the Lord said.
Last half of chapter 6 of 1 Corinthians.
Okay, there you go. This is Ben chapter 6.
I just read 1 Corinthians 6 last night. I don't think that's it.
Maybe you ran too fast through it.
That would not surprise
dreaming
me at
of Bitcoin.
It's not the first time that Dan boldly proclaimed a chapter and verse of where something is located.
It's also true. That's my entire strategy on 2nd verse of Solomon.
Anyway, I visited a church that wasn't our home, our house church this week. It's weird to say.
What a creepy way to put that. I went to a church that wasn't our home.
Well, I was going to say home church, but like home church could actually be just a like a building you go to that's your normal one. Ours is literally house. But like, anyway, I had some thoughts why this was going on, and it's not directed or complimenting this particular church, but they were things that I was thinking. I was like, I don't know. We probably could either give this up or we should do something different than after being out in the wilds. Yeah. And so anyway, I thought I'd share some of that. So let's go with, though, Buva, what's the Ask the Pastor?
So my Ask the Pastor question is in Genesis 37. Oh. So I was reading through the story of Joseph, right?
And Joseph! Oh, Joseph! It's from It's a Wonderful Life.
It's really cool when you make a reference and then immediately have to say where it's from.
Because
then
we all just,
yeah, I thought that was good.
We totally get it. Yeah.
Please keep doing
Joseph.
It.
Joseph! You know where that thing's from? Yeah. Joseph! Oh, Joseph! Who's this? Yahweh!
Hey, I wore that shirt out and about.
Did you get any questions?
No.
Okay.
All right, so in 26, this is after they've like thrown him into a pit. And are basically seeing this caravan of traders coming towards them, and they're deciding that they could kill their brother and just be done with it and whatever, or they could do something else, which is where Judah comes in and says, then Judah said to his brothers, what profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother, our own flesh. And his brothers listen to him. Okay?
Okay.
So in that part, I started to think to myself, like, I could take that one of two ways. Now, either Joseph is going to be killed by his brothers no matter what, and so Judah is like, hey, I wonder if I could save his life by, like, coming up with this sly thing of, like, no, we shouldn't kill him. Let's make a profit. And he's really trying to be a good brother, and he's like, I'm at least going to save his life, and he'll have a chance with the Ishmaelites if we sell him. Instead of killing him, then he doesn't have a chance at all. Or I could take it as, like, Judah's, like, being the most vicious in this moment where he's like, I mean, we could kill him. Yeah, I'm fine with that. But, like, at least we could make some money off the deal. Like, why don't we at least sell him? Then he's gone. We don't have to worry about him anymore. And I have some cash in my pocket. And so it was weird because, like, I kind of see both sides of why it could be either way. And I started to think to myself, like, this is the Judah that, like, Jesus comes from the tribe of Judah. And, like, I started thinking to myself, like, if I'm thinking blowing up the whole story, I'm not trying to put too much on, like, it's important that Judah was the worst, and that's why it's so cool that Jesus came from the tribe of Judah. I don't really care that much about it, but, like, I could see that as being a conversation to say, like, even our perfect lamb came from one of the most vicious brothers that existed under, of Jacob's children, of Israel's children, and stuff like that. And so I was wondering, as I am to ask the pastor, like, do you think that Judah was being altruistic and going, like, I'm going to save my little brother and give him one shot? He's going to die no matter, or he's going to die, or he's going to have this shot of, like, living a life somewhere else. Or was he being the kind of dude that's like, well, I might as well make a profit off the kid if I'm going to kill the guy. Like, at least I then have some cash to take back. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I was interested to hear what you guys' thoughts were on that.
I think he was just being selfish that, he's probably going to die at their hand, but it won't be on our hands.
Sure.
So it's not my responsibility. I don't think the money has nothing to do with it other than it was how he could sell it to the other brothers. It was more of, I don't want to be guilty of his death. Let's get rid of him. I don't want him here either. But if they take him and do something, that's on them.
Okay.
That's my thought. I mean.
Sure. Yeah. No, yeah. That's certainly how I was thinking about it. I just didn't know if I was taking that in wrong.
Yeah. So he did say, this was in, so Reuben rescued, so Judah should have rescued him, right? Like, Judah's the oldest brother. He
right.
should have taken control of the situation. He's totally bailed. He's part of the conspiratorial nature.
Seems like it, yeah.
Yeah. Reuben jumps in and rescues him the first time they try to get him. And then the thing that tilts me toward nefariousness is Judah saying, what profit is it?
Right.
And so, like, I was trying to check that other underlying word to make sure that, like, that's just not tinged by a translation thing.
Sure.
But, like, it's a, what benefit is to us, is it to us? Like, it's only bad because, like, everyone's going to know we killed our own brother. And so I think the motivation, because he said two things. He said, what profit is it to us
yep.
if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let us not our hand be upon him. So, like, I agree with Dan that I think he's basically going, they're gonna know it was us, and there's no benefit from us. He's dead, of course,
sure.
But like, we could get two. We get two for one. He's gonna die anyway,
right?
Our hands aren't upon it.
Yes, right.
And we made some money.
We don't have
the
to go lie to our father about it. We don't have to, like, say that we kill or didn't kill him. Blah blah blah. His blood's not our hand. All that different stuff. Like,
yeah. The only way it would occur to me that it wasn't, he didn't care about the money, is if like, hey, you couldn't. The Ishmaelites would be real suspicious if you're like, hey, take our brother.
Sure.
And so the only way they would take him
is if they
is if there was a selling him. And that might make sense to me. That might be
plausible
true.
Plausible deniability.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's it. So the opposite that I've heard has been the thought process that, like, his saying what profit would be to us, he knew that, like, he could not have convinced his brothers who wanted blood in that moment. Because this is coming right off the coattails of, like, he's the littlest brother in this group. All of the brothers are off in the world, like, being shepherds. And dad sends Joseph to basically check on their work and goes, like, hey, go bring back a report to me about how my other sons are doing their job right now. And this is also on the coattails of, like, Joseph very openly saying that his dreams, hey, I was standing and my yeah. group of chaff was standing above and, like, all of yours were kneeling at its feet. And isn't that crazy and cool? And then my staff was standing at attention and all of yours was fallen on the ground and like standing, you know, worshiping that one. And so, like, the youngest brother is going to the older brothers and going, hey, like, I keep having these dreams about my royalty and my exaltation over you guys. How crazy is that? And so the argument that I've heard is the fact that, like, Judah recognizing that his brothers were seeing blood, like, they wanted to kill Joseph. And he was thinking to himself, well, I can't overpower 10 of my brothers at that point. Maybe 9, because I think Benjamin wasn't there. But 9 of my brothers in this situation where they want blood. So the best case scenario is to deceive my brothers and convince them using this ploy of what profit would it be for us if we were to just kill him? Why won't we just sell him into slavery? And thus was giving Joseph the chance at a life that may not have been the life that he was intending, but at least he's alive and yeah. kind of thing. And then I also heard someone bring up that there's a connection that we're supposed to be drawing, or possibly that there are New Testament writers that are drawing, between the selling of Joseph for, like, a certain amount of money and the selling of Jesus for a certain amount of money. I don't know about that, and I haven't found anything with that. But people, I wanted to bring that up because I didn't know if you guys have ever heard that draw or that connection.
There are redemption definitely connections. Price. There are definitely connections on the selling and the 30 pieces of silver to Old Testament, just not there.
He's
got
a type,
it. Okay.
A type of Jesus,
right? And that makes sense. And that's why I was like, oh, I've never thought of it like that because I've never been presented that thought process of, like, because he was sold for 30 pieces, right? Like.
No, there's no indication
of
Joseph. Yeah.
Sorry, for some reason I thought Genesis
somebody,
was saying it was 30.
The 30 pieces was the price of a slave.
Right.
And, like, I want to say it's Zechariah that's got that. There's a reference in there that, like, more likely that's the case. Here's I don't it does not seem to me all Judah would have had to say was I'll tell Dan. You know
sure,
saying?
Yeah.
Like, this thing only works because they're all agreeing.
Yeah. So right. I was thinking, what a dysfunctional family.
Yeah, right.
Right. That's what I was just thinking.
There were times I didn't like my brothers, but I never was going to, like, honestly kill them.
Right.
You know, or send
or
them away forever.
Conspire to sell them into slavery?
Yeah.
Right. And this, I mean, well, the funny thing is,
what a brutal,
like,
world.
At this point in time, Joseph is in a pit that they have tossed him into that he's not getting out of. They're considering.
There's no coming back now.
And then I heard someone say something funny about the fact that, like, the storytelling goes in Genesis that, like, he's in the pit and then they all sat down to a nice meal. Mm-hmm. That, like, that's the next verse. They're like, and Joseph was thrown into a pit and then the brothers sat down for dinner and
took
decided
care of that nuisance.
What they were going to do with his fate. So they're like, Joseph, shut up. We're having bread. And they're sitting there just getting drunk while Joseph is in the thing. And, like, if you go into, like, later on with Jacob's blessings over his sons, the way that he talks about some of his sons is rough.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They were just bad relationships through and through. Like, there were only maybe 4 that weren't like, hey, do you remember when you did this to your father? And I can't believe, and it doesn't, like, go, and I forgave him. It just was like flat out, I'm pronouncing your tribe will be this way because you did this in my house. In my house! And it's like, oh, crap. Like, this is a rough family that we're coming from here. Uh-huh. That God's just like, this is the family that I'm making my kingdom from. And, like, you will see my kingdom come to earth through them. So, which is also, I love that thought, but, you know, whatever. So, okay, I was interested because as I was reading it, I felt more in the camp of, I feel like he's being a real ragamuffin in this moment. He's just like, well, I mean.
You ragamuffin.
Right, Joseph is like, you ragamuffin. And that's why Joseph was part schmuck to them later on when he's in Egypt and he's kind of running stuff, like leaves money in the mouth of their bags where they're supposed to leave it, and then they're thinking they're going to get killed. And he's like, ho, 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 ho.
Yeah, they're way more intentional with their malfeasance.
Right? Like Joseph's story was kind of, it was funny. Like, he's just dragged us out over like four or five times instead of being like, hey, you guys.
Well, that, and he's trying to get his whole family there. Like, he's trying to get Jacob to come and Benjamin to come as well. He keep bringing only 10 of the 13 that he wants there.
I've always found that the blessings, you mentioned the blessings, to be fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I think, I mean, so, okay, he just says these blessings. I mean, so.
Some of them are just, you know, like, if I did that to
my daughters, they'd be like, whatever. And they'd go off and do their life. You know, if I said, you're now smitten forever and you will have pimples the rest of you know, whatever. they'd be like, oh, well, that's great. Yeah. Dad's senile. I mean,
God honored those, like he honored those pronouncements of the kids?
I mean, a couple of them do come to pass, like how their tribes come into play.
I think they live their life based on partly, you know, of that curse.
There certainly is
blessing.
A lot of weight held culturally in those kind of blessings and cursings. Like, it's crazy.
You see that with Jacob and Esau, too, right? And he's like, I can't give you one. I already gave it away. And all the things that he said, he's like,
soup was good.
Yeah. Hope your inheritance, a.k.a. that bowl of soup was good. You hairy beast, get out of here.
We think we talked about this a little bit last time, but like, I always thought Joseph was being kind of squirrely. Because like when he was in charge of the famine, right? He's like, interpreted the dream. He said there's going to be a big famine. And instead of like preparing for the famine so he could give food away and keep people alive, he's like, he waited until he showed up for food, and he's like, well, I tell you what, I'll take all your livestock, and then we'll give you a little bit of food. Oh, I'll take all your land. We'll give you a little bit of food. Hey, you want to be an indentured servant? We'll give you a little bit of food. Joseph managed everybody through the famine. I'm like, he fleeced everybody through the famine. Yeah. That's what he did.
Then Egypt got really powerful.
Yeah, and instead of going like, hey, you can keep your land. We stored up for the famine. We're ready for this. No problem. He's like, give me your land, and I'll give you a little bit of food. And like, that didn't seem like it was a good, honest, generous thing to do.
Well, it seems like God put him in that place where, like, that's what, not necessarily like God told him then to fleece the dudes of Egypt and make it to where they sold all their livestock and land, but like, this seems to be the situation that God is, like, giving Joseph this ability to interpret. Like, Joseph says multiple times that, like, I interpret because God is the one who interprets, not me. And that's what gets him to the point where he's even having these kind of conversations with Pharaoh in the first place, which allows him to be in this place to build up the kingdom of Pharaoh at this point in time to the point where it's at, where Exodus happens.
And like, we did talk about this a little bit last week, that, like, the Old Testament is pretty set up that it doesn't tell you how to feel about a thing. Like, things you didn't question when you were a kid or when you first got to know Jesus, and you just read it flat and you're like, yeah, okay, that happened. And then you get a little bit older and you're like, why isn't anybody upset about this? And you're like, they actually are upset about it. The Bible is not explicit in saying, and God was upset, and God was mad.
Yeah.
You know, like, it doesn't do that. And so it is left up a little bit to be like, does that sound like an upsetting situation? Yeah, it's okay to be upset about that.
I think that constantly forces you into the conversation of, like, the kind of things that are left out of the Bible that we have questions on. Like, there's a reason that the Bible is constructed and built the way that it is. And as God is telling a set of stories and setting a set of principles and setting his identity and our identity and the identity of his kingdom and his people based off of this. And it's just the point of these stories is not to answer those questions that you have. And so you got to deal with that.
So we go to this church, and it was interesting. It was a church in a school gymnasium, and that just reminded me of there was a real harsh thing that came out of it. I'll get at that to the end. But the sermon was on Genesis 30 and 31.
Okay,
and so Genesis 30 and 31, it was titled Integrity. Integrity. World integrity does not show up in the scriptures for sure. Now it's fine. You can summarize it. But 30 and 31 is about Jacob's dealing with Laban. And and so if you remember the setup, like, he asks to marry Rachel, Laban's daughter. Mm-hmm. Laban is a turd. And so, like, is constantly, he realizes, and Laban will say this, he's like, God has revealed to me that I am being blessed through you, through Jacob, which is true, actually. It's unclear as to how often Yahweh's speaking with Laban, but Laban's not an idiot.
He's like, look at all those herds.
Yeah. And so, anyway, he's like strung along. He keeps changing, you know, Jacob's wages, and he's like, hey, you can marry this daughter, and he fools him, you know. And so, and he ends up marrying two daughters, and it's like taking forever. And so, anyway, the guy, the guy, the sermon was like, we need to be I've found this, that most churches that I've visited, my kids always say, Dad, what did you think of the sermon? And I was like, 9 times out of 10, if not 99 out of 100, I'm like, right conclusion, wrong scripture. Right conclusion, wrong scripture. Do we need to be people of integrity? Yes, absolutely. Is Jacob a man of integrity? No. Not even in this particular set of scriptures. So they're like, if you remember what happens is Jacob's like, hey, I got to get out of here, man. I'm going to take my family. We're going to leave. And Laban's like, I'll pay you anything, whatever you want. And he's like, no amount of money. I want to get out of here. He's like, whatever you want. And he goes, I tell you what I would do. He said, just let me keep the speckled sheep or whatever. And you keep the pure ones. Now, he's likely to have most of his flock is probably going to be pure. And then you get Jacob, like, getting this almond branch and like something that seems real divination type of crafty. If you Google it, Answers in Genesis will go and try to give you some sort of business about how there's something legit about how this thing is going on. It very much looks like there's a level of, like, he's trying to make magic happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this thing does happen. It gets all kinds of speckled sheep and crap because God said he would do it. Like, later Jacob goes, I had a dream, and the Lord spoke to me and said, I will bless you. I will make the speckled sheep. So, like, it had nothing to do with these weird sticks. But the point was is that he promised Laban that he would only keep the speckled ones and then intentionally manipulated the situation so that more speckled ones would come. He didn't walk with the integrity. He manipulated it to make sure the outcome would be his. And then later on, it moves into chapter 31, and the Hebrew even does it. You know, like, Jacob's the trickster, right? That's his name. It's the source of his name. And so it's like, after this thing goes down and, like, he becomes flush with speckled animals, he bails in the middle of the night. Like, he doesn't go, Laban, but our agreement has been met. I'm leaving as an honorable man with integrity. With your children. He picked up his crap, and he left in the middle of the night. And so here's the thing, the bullet points the man had. Again, yes, people of integrity, yes. You don't have to be, does integrity equal fairness? No. Now, he was using the word integrity. He probably meant honor would have been better. Integrity means I won't be split, integer, like it cannot be split. Mm-hmm. Not that it has good moral values. It's actually probably abyss. I didn't care for the definition. But, like, at the end of the day, it was a terrible scripture to try to go, we need to be men of integrity like Jacob. And, like, didn't even flinch. This is exactly what he proposed. And he goes, like this man, think of this story.
I'm
like,
everybody go back and cheat your office.
I'm like, do not think
of this.
So I was
going to say, I was like, I'm waiting for this, like, to make sense where he was like, this is obviously integrity because blah, 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 blah. He's like, no. It speaks for itself. Look at this integritous action.
Now, here was the of the few takeaways I had when I was at this service. The first one was, this is what happens when you try to turn, especially the Old Testament, into a rule book. When you, because frankly, and this is what my oldest daughter said, is she goes, there were really good examples of lacking integrity.
Right.
You could have used these, both of these fellas, and gone, see, no,
do the opposite.
Right. But if you, the Bible Project did a really good episode on this. It was related to, like, you need to don't think of it first as like rule book. It's a collection of stories that tell you something about God, something about people.
Right.
But if you're looking at every story to say, now what do I do tangibly with my body and mind, you're not approaching it correctly. This does build into a narrative. There are takeaways on how do I live my life. You can take it away. But if that's what you go looking for, you'll end up dragging something out of it that it's not. This is not a moral story.
Yeah, the goal I think it's to trying to get the Sunday school version.
Exactly.
You know, yeah.
Yes.
It's like, oh, everything's great, flammable board, he's wonderful, integrity. And it's like, have you read it?
No.
Did you read that?
Yes. And like,
Solomon's great. He has some good
Noah's a story about trusting God.
Right. You can deduct.
Do you remember that whole vineyard thing?
You can deduct 1,000 lives.
Neither does Noah.
Well, I planted a vineyard.
Exactly. His wife does. not good. So,
great.
Anyway.
Can we do a Noah's Vineyard like Martha's Vineyard? Like, that sounds like a fun place.
That's terrible. Do not suggest that again. I repent of you of hearing it, to be honest with you. But anyway, it was, I felt, I've no doubt this man loves Jesus.
Yeah.
And the things he was pointing people to were right outcomes. But it was, and this is what I said, because I think, I could be wrong, but I feel like my wife's like, I say this all the time, like wrong scripture, right outcome. She's like, but he said, he pointed everybody to the right thing. I said, here's the thing. If you're new and you take it in, that will steam. That will carry you.
Yeah.
But you're going to get 5 years down the road, 7 years down the road, and you're going to read that story, and then it's going to fall apart. And you're going to think either, I don't know how to read this well, or that guy lied to me.
You've been taught wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, poorly. I want people to trust the scriptures over me.
Right.
And so it's more important that you walk away. Like, this totally happens. It happens to me probably every fourth or fifth Sunday. I'll teach something, and I've got no particular takeaways. I don't go, and here's the things of which you're going to do in response to this. I'm going to go, we know the thing now, and God will do something with that to some of you in your lives today. But, like, I'm not going to prescribe to you something to go home and do, because that would be me wrenching out rain, and I'm not going to do it. And so, anyway, the guy was very passionate about it, and, again, confident he loves Jesus, and the things he was pointing people to was right. But I worry about what it does in people's ability to understand Scripture and to trust the things that they learned in Sunday school or 5, 10 years ago, because we took something from the scriptures that wasn't there.
I think of a social media group I'm in that's just filled with atheists and homosexuals and people who really hate the church and hate God. And I can just echo. I mean, they say a lot of things back. Oh, yeah, you know, blah, blah, blah. And some of the stuff what you're saying right there, they'll just rip apart the stuff they've learned. And it breaks my heart for them. And I'm just like, well, but we did that to them, too. It's like, why didn't we explain this what happened?
Right. Yeah. Right.
Because there's some tough things in Scripture.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah. I would say, like, if there's not something where you're like, boy, how do I understand God's character in this, or how do I understand Scripture well on any handful of things, then I suggest you're not reading it closely.
I did a nice little sermon on
to take in.
It's been a few months ago now, but I did it again in Africa, so it's fresh in my mind. But I spent some time in there, going to the part where these people will come down on God. It's like you realize there were children who died in the flood. You know, so I kind of play. It's like, yes, there were.
Yes,
right.
You know, yes, and there were people. If you look at the words of Jesus, you know, marrying and being, you know, married, eating, drinking, all the stuff they were doing, all this stuff. So we set up a party, and then they were sitting there having a good time under the tree, laughing, and the water sweeping them away. You know, it's like, yes, that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and that's what Peter said. That's what based in 2 Peter is like. Don't forget that.
Yes.
Don't forget God expects obedience.
Yes,
and it's like you can't like, oh, it's a cute story of animals on a boat,
right?
You know,
and there were two animals. And they loved each other.
yeah.
When a mama lion and a daddy
lion. It's a horrible story.
Yeah. Yeah, like it was one of the things, unfortunately, that it missed was to be able to say, because we were focused on the integrity of Jacob, which wasn't really there, that like the thing you could have taken away was God is faithful even when Jacob was not.
Right.
Yeah.
God made a promise. He kept a promise. He said people would be blessed. Even crappy Laban got blessed by the man who, with God, said blessings will come through this line, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, right? And so God is faithful even when people are not.
How hard is it to wait 14 years?
And how long does that keep going?
Yes.
Like every situation in which God blesses and fulfills his promises, no matter how bad Israel gets every time, on both sides of that spectrum.
Right.
Of like, I will bless your house and you will have splendor and you will have money galore all over the place. I will also tell you that I'm going to curse you and I'm going to remove you from your land if you keep doing this. I made you a promise, and I kept that promise, and I'm going to continue keeping that promise, is because God's identity that we're getting from that is he is a promise keeper.
Yeah.
When he says he's going to do something, you can trust that he is faithful in what he is going to do.
And to Dan's point, like, he waited, you're right, he waited 14 years, two ladies, before he left. Sometimes, like, often, the way God keeps his promises is not what you expect.
Right.
And can you walk faithfully in those things? And that was the thing that you could say about Jacob, is that he stuck the thing that he believed God had brought him to do. He wasn't completely faithful in all the actions that he took within those things. But like, it's just that it's unfortunate, because it was a well-intentioned, but it was a miss. And I thought, like, it looks good up front, but may cause you trouble later. And so there was that. But here was the one of the thing that like Paul might say, but that I that the scripture would not say. So this has nothing to do with whether Jesus would dictate this or not. But
Corinthians 7, by the way.
Okay, 1 Corinthians 7.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
I was off.
You stopped
by
at 6.
Yeah, today or tomorrow is 7 through 9.
So
yeah.
Okay.
I'll get to it tomorrow, Dan. I'm sorry.
There was, I was oddly, this is fairly normal. As people are transitioning, like you can hear, hey, the guys, the pastor's praying, and then the worship band comes up or whatever. And it just struck me as I thought, well, why doesn't the worship band shouldn't sit and listen to the pray with everybody? And it's because like you don't want an awkward transition, right? You don't want 15, 20, 30 seconds while people are moving stuff around. And I thought, you know, we should stop that. I'd be okay dealing with the awkward go, you know what? Yeah. No, why don't these people who are leading me in worship pray with all the people and not pull them out of that? I know why we do it. I totally get it. And it's not sinful or anything. I just thought like by practice, wouldn't I just rather they finish praying?
Can't we all pray together?
Yes, let's do it. And like if someone is so
isn't
put
it awesome when we do
and they're so put off by to see the people like get up and then go walk up there and like, well, this should have started 30 seconds ago.
These tunes should be ready for me by the time I open my
eyes. Are you kidding me? I have to wait for that bass guitarist to throw it around his shoulders?
Yeah. This is what I'm saying. And like the type of thing that we're trying to keep people from thinking, I'd rather they just say out loud.
Yeah.
You know, Pastor, I was put off by that. It's like, well, good. Now I know what to pray about for you, sir.
Seems pretty shallow.
Yeah, it's like,
you know what I'm going to pray for? You shutting up more often.
Let's start now.
Yeah, please. I'd love for you to come with me, with hands held, to come to Jesus and go, I was really upset about that 30 seconds, God.
Anyway,
weren't you too?
It's totally minor. Now, the final thing. Now, this one was
I would hate it if Ben visited my church if I was a pastor. I would see Ben walk in. I'm like, no.
Here's the deal.
We're watching a video.
I honestly have no intention of coming in and like picking a place up. I don't want to pick. Like, I know what it takes to prepare a sermon and give one and like the stuff that guy's dealing with during the week. I don't think anything negative about this man. I don't think anything negative about the church at all. Yeah. There are just things that like as you're you just don't have the chance. Dan, you probably noticed this. Like, you don't ever – you're doing it. And so it's very rare that you get to sit back and you're taking it in and stuff just occurs to you.
You know, I could go as a consultant to any church and tell them 10 things right away that they could do to improve their service. Yeah. But
if
in the
you
middle
give me
of here,
700
I can't
Dan
see,
bucks, I can turn this place right around.
Okay, but here's the thing. I was on the verge of tears, like no joke. And it happened during the worship set. We came in and the worship was playing and it was in a gym. And so they had electronic drums to try to control noise. Get it. I think I've recommended it. the place had, if you watch the people singing and the way that they're playing and stuff, it had so much energy to it. But it felt so dead. It felt so dead. And I have felt that in a couple other places that I've been in the worship set, and some of this is because I'm used to and where we're at, I can hear myself sing. And that it wasn't loud. They were controlling the sound. It was perfectly fine. But for some reason, I don't think – here's what I think. I actually think God was – this was for me, and it didn't have anything to do with the church itself.
Yeah.
But the thing that hit me is that, like, it looks so alive, but is dead.
Sounds like Revelation.
Doesn't it? Right. It's right. It's exactly that.
Yeah.
It's exactly that. It's not Philadelphia. It's
Laodicea?
You may.
I couldn't remember either. That's
anyway.
That's why I just
thought you were
going to
quote a line from the movie Philadelphia.
Hanks says, I'm alive outside, but I'm so dead inside.
Well, and so, cancer. Like, to be honest, I was kind of looking around, and I'm like, this like an environment can do this, can create something that feels very alive but is dead. And so I prayed for the church. And then I thought that can happen anywhere.
Yeah,
it's any like anything can look like we are propping up a corpse. You weaken and Bernie's the church. And I was praying like I was on the verge of tears because it was like it felt very heavy to me in the moment about actions that you can take Christians in general, ignore church bodies specifically, but Christians in general that give the impression of being vibrantly alive, but they are dead. And we are being held up like corpses puppeting around as if everything is the way that it should be. And that is relevant to a personal spiritual life. That is relevant to communities of people. That is relevant to churches of people. And it made me very sad, and it felt very heavy to me at the moment. And so I was praying. I was praying for me. I was praying for our church community. I was praying for that church community and people in general. That's what I'm saying. It's like I don't think it had anything to do with the people on the stage. I think it had to do with God doing something in the moment that helped bring something to my mind that felt very relevant.
Yeah. I think the modern church, though, is set up for fake.
It can.
I mean, not intentionally even.
Yes,
They're all the motives are right. But we want energy, and we got to feel this, and we got to do a key change here.
Magnetic.
And we've lost our passion for God to be a passion for entertainment. They wouldn't say it that way, but
right. And the thing is that, like, you may not notice the difference, because they could have a very the same. You could have a passion for God, and like, you could play the same tunes,
right?
And you could play through the same sound system, and like, everything may also be the same. But that's kind of the point, is you wouldn't know. And so it was a burden of a risk that, like, you can't tell. You can't tell by how the bodies are propped.
Right.
And so anyway, I don't – that maybe that means something to you if you're listening. I don't know. But it felt very – I can't say that over the last 5, maybe even 10 years, that something has felt that direct for me that I was supposed to take something from. It felt very definitive to me. Like, I didn't have any doubt that, like, I was supposed to take that in that way in a broad context. Anyway, that's it. That's all I had.
What a victory that is for the enemy, of like, to have something that looks is even intentioned to be right, but just lacks all actual like worth and ascribing worship to a true God. Mm-hmm. And like, that's scary. Like, that's scary that's. It's the thing that, it's not the nefarious, like, devil in the corner kind of thing where it's, you know, snidely whiplashing your way through a cartoon episode. It's making something look just about right.
Yeah. And then the product being rather than
so,
the producer.
Right. Yes, exactly. Like, it looks so real.
Yeah.
But like, taking away any actual depth to it, like looking fast, an inch of it. It's like, oh no, this is an effigy of like, that's scary.
And
that's
crazy. And here's the thing is my house church environment can do the exact same
thing.
Sure,
of course.
Hey man, it's got like, it feels organic and authentic and like stripped down. Yeah, right.
All of our values feel like we're aligned with the Bible, blah, blah.
Yeah, and right. Trader Joe's.
Which is owned by Aldi.
But like, it runs the same risk. Like, you can love the facade of anything.
Absolutely.
And it's going to attract, it can attract people who just like the flavor of the facade.
Sure.
There's no difference in the risk in any of those two environments. And so,
yeah. Or the old church singing all the hymns.
Yep. 100%. Yeah, exactly.
You know, they battle over the what style, and it's like, yeah, you can still lose. It doesn't matter.
Right.
You can lose
exactly.
It on all of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Insert anything here. Like, it can absolutely be this propped up effigy.
Yeah. Yeah. And so anyway, I was praying that, like, one of the things for me was like, I don't help me to know the difference.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, if you're getting away with Weekend at Bernie's, like, how someone has to be able to tell, and like, help me to make sure that I'm not missing something. And maybe everything sniffs just fine. Maybe everything's fine in my place, and don't have wool over my eyes somewhere.
Yeah.
But like, maybe I do.
So I went to a church a few weeks ago, talking about the orphanage and stuff, and I had to slap myself a few times because it was, I mean, the whole time I'm thinking, like, you guys obviously didn't like rehearse at all.
Right.
I mean, everybody's waiting for the other person to start the song and you know, like, it was just clearly not rehearsed.
Yep.
And I got a little judgy, you know. Uh-huh. It's not like we're great, but it's like, at least we rehearse.
Right.
We have a plan for the song. And I had to correct myself because you could also, like, they just love Jesus, you know.
Right.
They weren't there. They weren't there to impress anybody,
right?
You know?
Right.
Just, or
obviously,
certainly we wouldn't care if I was impressed, you know. And
there's
a really great
the
church, and
the God of the universe, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's like, okay, just shut up, Dan. And
yeah,
and I have to do that. Oftentimes, I go because I'm in a place that I like.
right.
I like the style, I like everything, and so you go different places. I think it's healthy to go somewhere other places
Absolutely.
Once in a while, and just like go, okay, this is different, and
yep,
it's okay.
This actually, the thing that stood, the thing that got me thinking about that transition thing, there was, it happened, but then there was also a deal, and if you, in between songs or whatever, the worship guys kind of, you can see him, and like, he's talking, and he what did he say? He says something like, yeah, that was great. Praise God for what he has done. But like, one, I don't know. I'm not sure he meant it, but like, you could see out of the side of his eye. He's like flipping stuff around. Like, he's saying a transition thing.
Man, and that stinks.
But here's the thing. Is it fine to praise God for what he's done? Of course it is. But like, I knew he was flipping through stuff, and I get it that most people probably aren't paying attention to him. And I thought, I don't care that he did it. I would like to relieve him of the responsibility to feel like he has to.
Right.
Yeah.
That would be the thing. Like,
to pretend like he's not flipping through.
We don't
through.
Need your filler right. exultations.
You, in fact, you go, hey, give me just a second. I'm going to find this tune. Okay. Like, I don't care.
I feel that way when people tell me to give him praise with my hands. Like, don't tell me what to do.
Give him praise with your hands.
They mean, what they mean is
clap. Tongue. Jesus.
They're like, you should clap. I'm like, I don't want to clap. That's not what I'm doing, right? And so they're like, give Jesus praise with your hands. I'm like, I don't do that. I don't like him bossing me around like that. I praise like this. I'm double hands up. I don't want to stop and applause. Then it feels like I'm applauding the tune you just said.
Do you ever do the hold the TV where you got two hands down?
I do the wide.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
I've done the up
That's
before.
My favorite.
I feel like to do the one. I like to do one hand up. That's how I roll it.
Be honest, my arms get tired. Like, that's why I kind of stick with the hold the TV. Like, this is
up in the air.
Yeah, rather than this, because my arms get tired quickly. Like this feels right. Still opening my hands to the Lord. Dang it, I need to check that.
I don't do that in any other context of my life. Like, if I ever get my team scores a touchdown or whatever, I don't. I don't have hands in the air, so I just don't celebrate at all that way.
Yeah, actually, you're not a fist pump.
When was it decided that you praise with arms up, like hands lifted high?
Well, there's places in Scripture. What does Paul say, lifting, holding? It's in Corinthians, I think, where he's like,
Ephesians 6.
Lifting, holding hands.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dudes, and it's for fellas, too, so you're we're all in.
All I can promise you is that it's not in 1 Corinthians 1 through 6.
Yes, okay. Ephesians.
It might be 7 through 9. I don't know yet.
But yeah. I mean, you know, but that's the thing, is that, like, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's not prescribing. Scripture, like, everyone has to do
I mean, just saying that you did it, like, just because it says lift holy hands once doesn't mean you're supposed to lift holy hands all the time.
I feel like, isn't there songs about, like, lifting your hands?
I mean, David says it all the time, but David says a lot of stuff all the time.
He also danced nude in the street. We don't go around doing that.
Well, sometimes.
You don't.
Dad's like, whoa.
When the cameras are off.
Depends on what state you're in, honestly. No. That's all I'm saying. Oklahoma, it's more acceptable.
All right, you're listening to Live from the Path. Hey, now listen to me. Again, I want you to hear my heart in that. Like, I'm no intention of, like, picking a church. I just, the things that jump out at you that you don't notice. And frankly, like, I don't know. I probably wouldn't have even thought about that transition thing. It kind of makes sense to me. Like, oh, yeah, you know, yeah, they're ready to go after the guy gets done. Great. Like, it makes sense to me until it doesn't. It just hit me that day. And I don't care if you still do it. The Lord will handle all the things. I'm just, the things that occurred to me while being outside of my normal context.
You're so mean, Ben.
I know. Hit me up in the complaint line, 515-517-0085. I purposely didn't say what the church was, because, again, there's no reason to. It's irrelevant to the part of the story. But if that was you and you want to talk about it, 515-517-0085.
If you had to give the name, would you say it's woke or toke?
But that's the only choice I have? It's either the weed shop or a liberal church?
Yeah, no. You don't have the other choices. In this situation, it's woke or toke.
It's the or.
All right. Wow. Okay. Wait a fist bump. Victory. I don't victory dance when my team wins, but I celebrate dance when I win.
I celebrate me.
You know who's great in this situation? A Ben.
Oh man. I tell you this. This is 20 seconds. I'm getting old, though. I took my Bible, my preaching Bible there, and, like, the guy was, he starts to tell this story, and I'm like, I don't remember some of these things. So I go to read it while he's talking to double check it, and, like, I have my glasses off, and this giant study Bible
right
up
here.
3 inches from my face. I'm like, I've got to take the large print for travel. I look ridiculous.
What's this guy's name? Hakub? Hakub?
I'm just checking. I gotta be honest. How long has it been since we had a show, fellas? About 3 weeks?
Really?
Maybe
that
two.
What it's been?
Two, maybe two. Yeah.
Maybe two?
Yeah.
You two have not left a breath of air in the first half hour of the show.
It's only been half an hour?
Not a breath.
54 minutes.
Not a breath in 54 minutes.
Hold on. Okay.
I have never,
Mike, 20 seconds on that,
seen the pair of you so wound up and allowing no pauses in a conversation for almost a solid hour.
Hey, man, I feel like all of you have talked so far. That's
not
right.
You have misheard the last hour.
My bad. Hey, there are many weeks I say four words because I'm like, I can't get in.
Whatever, Dan, you've talked like 10 times.
Well, I did today. I had Diet Coke, though.
Dan did have a Diet Coke on him.
Dan's got all good.
I've been talking all night long.
They all hyped up on Diet Coke to get in this conversation.
That's probably a fair critique.
All right, fine.
Most weeks, even. Yeah. Move over, repent.
What do you got to talk about, Mike?
I got nothing.
Okay. There we go.
I tried talking about Bitcoin, and you shut me down.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the clown show. What do you got?
Welcome to the Luddite Corner with Mike.
Do we got some advice to give, Mike?
Yeah, is that where we're at?
Yeah, yeah.
You have no articles or nothing?
I'm trying to talk about the Bitcoin article.
There were a couple of things from the backlog of stuff, but it's all seemed pretty heavy. I'll pick it up next week.
I'm going to educate you for 5 minutes on what a Bitcoin is.
Here we go. Dear Life from the Path.
Yep.
My husband and I have been together for 9 years, married for 7. I moved into his house with him, and I'm still not on the mortgage. I work full-time in the medical field and contribute to all the bills. We did meet with an attorney, and if, God forbid, something happens to him, we have a quit claim deed, and I wouldn't have to leave. However, he has said to me several times, if you do this or that, you can't live here anymore.
I want took a turn.
Wow. I'm on eggshells a lot.
The presence of your legal document is not the problem.
My concern is that he could tell me to leave at any time, and I wouldn't have a say in it. I love him with all my heart, but he makes me feel like I'm disposable. It makes me sad and uneasy. What do you think?
Hold on.
You've been married for 7 years, though. Just because you're not on the deed, like you're still legally married.
Yeah, I don't. Steve, what do you think about this?
I got a lot of thoughts running through my head.
Yeah,
I got.
What's the like? What comes to the? What's the cream? What's the cream of the crop? What's the marshmallow?
No, just what's the cream?
I go backwards to like. They chose to get married.
Yep.
This is a gal, right?
Yeah.
He's asking the question.
Yeah.
You guys got married. Like, I don't know.
Do you find it's necessary to have both people on the mortgage?
So I'm not super worried about that.
I don't care about that right there.
Because they're married. Like, if this is a whole institution, I don't know if this particular marriage is or not. Because they were together a couple years before they got married, so.
Yeah, unholy.
I'm not judging there, but just traditionally speaking.
Steve's not wrong. Virgins marry fast. That's what I'm going to tell you. They only date for months, not years. You tell me it ain't right.
I'm just talking about my own experience. My wife and I were married at 20. Maybe that did or did not have something to do with it.
Yes. That's why I didn't have time to ask the father-in-law. Said, I got things to do.
Dan didn't even ask the parents.
That's right. Yeah. Somebody goes, hey, we've been dating for 4 years. And say, you knock it off.
Dating, practice, pretend married.
Yeah, okay. No way.
And yeah. So are we worried that we're getting kicked out of the house?
I mean, he is threatening her. Right, he's like, "Hey, you straighten up your ways, or you're out of here."
I mean, what's she doing?
This does seem to be
could be justified. She gets the discount peanut butter.
You know, I don't like the nutty spread.
did she burn my toast? Hillel, Steve's on the Hillel train.
Okay, so like, is the major concern here that like she seems to be focused in on the property, and like we're more focused in on like. Why does your marriage sound like it's in a bit of shambles?
Yeah, yeah. I'm with Steve. Like, why are we planning for the divorce? So let's invest in the marriage. I agree with that totally. Because the reality was, like, it doesn't matter his name's on the deed. Like, if you divorce, they'll sort it out. The problem is that you were in such – whatever it is about your marriage is, like, something that your husband could hold over you, he is holding over
right.
you. That's the problem.
Yeah.
That's the issue that you have right
now.
I'm
so sorry for you in this situation that, like, your husband is constantly saying, like, you keep doing that, I'm going to kick you out of this house. Like, that sounds like a horrible marriage to be in.
Wait, is there anything that she could be doing of which you would find this acceptable?
If she was peeing on the carpet.
If he was threatening to kick her out of the house? Yeah, if she was, like...
Gallivanting with another fella?
Sure, to an extent, yeah. Like, I think that there's some things that, like...
We're like, hey, listen, I've told you, you got to stop pooping
on
these
rugs. It's
unfortunate.
You guys were dating for 2 years. Either you were not paying attention or she just changed overnight.
She held it in for a while.
I can't do this anymore.
By the way,
My wife will argue that I did not belch nearly as much as I do after marriage as I did before.
Yeah. I didn't realize, but my farting has become a real problem over the last couple of years.
You've also been together for 20 years.
Especially while I'm sleeping.
That's just how your body rocks.
I've never been accused so many times of nefarious farting while I'm sleeping as if I had scoped it out and like every 2:30 in the morning I decide to let one womp out of there.
I've heard that kind of thing.
God bless our wives, fellas.
I said, what are you doing awake? You should be sleeping. That's not my problem.
What are you looking at my butt for?
If someone wrote in and asked that to your life or the path, we would be like, yeah, you're totally looking at this wrong. Why are you awake in the middle of the night? Yeah. Not, why is your husband so flatulent at 2 o'clock in the morning?
I'm in my Sabbath rest. You want me to try to...
This is the Lord's Day, babe. You should be asleep. Oh, that's horrifying. That is horrifying.
I cannot control what happens at my leisure.
Every sitcom dad from the 80s now makes all the sense to me.
Now, listen. Here's the thing that I've never experienced. I have no idea what an uncontrolled fart from me sounds like because I meter them all. Ever since I got married, I meter them. I keep an eye on them. I don't let them get out of hand. But I can't imagine what this noise is when I'm sleeping, paying zero attention, got no wherewithal about me.
Yeah. I should have known when I said what I said that this is how this conversation was going to break down. Yeah. Mike's going to be like, I'd like to talk to you about all of my marital flexions. I didn't get a chance to talk the first 54 minutes of this conversation. I'm going to give you 2 straight minutes on my marital flatulence,
Dave,
though.
This is what it looks like for him to save it up and let it go late at night.
That's the truth. In both ways.
All right, Boobit, so you're saying, one, I feel bad for the lady because she's even in a situation where this dude is doing this.
Right. You're not, there's no situation in which she's like completely blameless. I don't think that's a real situation. But like, you guys really need some help to figure this piece out. And you're absolutely right. It's not the mortgage that you need to figure out. Yeah. Like the stability that you're looking for is not a legal document. Like that's not what you need. Mm-hmm. Like you need to be reassured in your marriage that like he's not constantly trying to throw you away. Like that's the situation. Your husband needs to step up to that. There's probably stuff that you're doing that drives him nuts. Like there's no doubt about it. But like that's not how people act when they love each other. Like that's not how people like threaten to kick each other out of their houses when they're trying to work towards a godly marriage or a marriage in general that is accommodating to one another.
It's amateur
and
hour
is,
for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. You should feel safe. And you do not. And I'm so sorry about that situation. And I hope that you and your husband can find some place, whether it's a counseling or whether it's a you need Jesus, which is undoubted, like to be the center of your marriage and an arbiter for both of you so that you both can see what it feels like to be safe and loved and considered within your marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure my wife has all kinds of stuff that just got her name on it. And
Yeah.
And that's no big deal.
My wife's name is the first name on our car, on my car. Yeah. I don't care.
I prefer it that way. So, yeah, let's take a couple more steps back and not worry about our housing and fix the root of the problem.
Yep. She's worried about losing that investment of 7 years into that mortgage, and she should be highly more concerned about the investment in that relationship and in the marriage and put their focus on there. And I think that would make it healthier for everyone. So
doesn't make sense though. It was like, why wouldn't he just put her on a mortgage? Like,
unless it's not that easy. That's what I was just gonna say. It's like, I mean, 29 pages of signing. I mean, and new interest rates, and you know, it's just like.
Okay. Oh, think about that.
So the pair of you guys, like, that sounds like a lot of effort.
You don't have to refinance to add somebody.
I don't know. I've never done that.
Here's the thing. If I don't remember.
At least got
to
pay a lawyer.
The loan. I was trying to think. I think the loan from our house is in my name, but I think the deed is in both of our names, which is.
Yeah, see, that makes more sense.
Here's the deal. If it really mattered to her, if I was him, I would be like, this seems like a really odd hang up because I'm not going anywhere. But he doesn't seem like a nice man. You know what I'm saying? No. Like it's just a symptom of a broader problem. Here's what I would tell him. If you had a chance to speak to this guy, is that like what you have is the limits of the goodness of your marriage are only what you can personally handle. Right, because the threat that he's doing is like, you do the thing that I want to do or behave the way I want you to behave. Otherwise, I will force you, like I will threaten you so that you fall into line. But like the problem with that is that like he is not allowing this woman to shape, influence, and change him. Like we've talked about this multiple times that like the way that I understand biblically how we talk about marriage. There are only the person that you're married to is the person who has the ability to shape and change you. You get to say hose off to the rest of the world if you want to. These are the people who have the ability to do that. much of that influence that a lady has, men tend to speak respect. When they feel respected, they tend to listen. They can be influenced by that. If they feel like they're being disrespected, they're not actually likely to take in the types of things that you're saying. And so there's a practicality to it. The way that the Bible talks about men is a man who's willing to lay down his life and give up everything he has for the woman that he is married to. She tends to feel safe and trustworthy with that man. And so when he tells her, suggests something to her on something about the way that she's thinking or doing something, she's more likely to listen to that very thing because it comes from a man who can be trusted.
Wow.
And so as those things are true, what he's doing is closing off any ability for himself to be better and for his marriage to be better, because he's basically cut off that party. Because the limits, I do not want my wife to suffer by the limits of what I believe to be the right way for any given thing to go in any given time. There is a place of which I bear the responsibility for our marriage, and so if we've got to flip a coin or make a decision, I will bear that. Mm-hmm. But it is foolish for me to cut off the influence of this woman that God has gave me, of who is the one person whose praise elates me and who speaks harshly to me. I feel super low. I can tell every other dude or lady in the world to go take pound sand, but not this woman. And so she has much power over me, and she should, just like the man does the other way. And so I think that is he's missing out. He thinks that he's controlling and that his world is better because of that way that he can manipulate his wife. He's wrong. He's missing out. And he's a fool because of it.
Wow.
One arm up, Booba. You know what I'm saying? Thangler says, your husband should not be threatening you. Good. You live in a state which assets are decided by a judge, quotes, on an equitable basis. For your peace of mind, schedule an appointment with an attorney and discuss where you should be financially if your marriage should not work out. Then plan accordingly. It's time to bring in some lawyers.
Yeah. I mean, here's the deal. She said she loves this man with all her heart. Bless her. But like the things that need to change are in the marriage itself. It has nothing to do with this legal stuff.
Yep.
And so I would you meet Jesus. You pray through that. You find community who can support you even when your marriage isn't ideal. And you passionately attempt to try to help this man understand and see Jesus too, and then he will understand and see the world around him better. It's very hard to move people who have a sense of authority and their like power over people, because why would you give it up, right? Like Jesus changes that, but like people just don't normally go, oh, you know what would be better is if she doesn't do what I say whenever I say it.
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying?
I just ride the wave of unknown.
Yeah, but it's such a low bar, dude. Like, you're missing out, and you just don't know it.
Okay, ready? Last one. Dear Live from the Path, my best friend has an aging father who will not bathe more than twice a month. Even then, it's usually just 1 5-minute shower about every 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Her dad changes clothes at about the same frequency. My friend has tried everything, asking nicely, nagging, pleading, etc. He continues to ignore her. What, if anything, can my friend do?
We're missing context.
Yeah.
Why are they together?
Well, no. Does he stink?
It doesn't say. It doesn't say whether he's got some...
This man bathes and changes his clothes every 3 weeks, Ben.
But, I mean, he's elderly, right? So it's not like probably working and sweating and getting gross. He's probably just laying around the house watching, you know, Andy Griffith and
Gunsmoke.
Whistling.
Yeah, just well, I got my whistling time.
You guys are taking in a world that I think I take in differently, because I don't think it matters if you're watching Gunsmoke or if you're out welding.
Well, but you're a
young man.
3 weeks
is 3 weeks, friend. That's a ripe fish.
You're a young man.
I don't know about that. It's not normal.
A young man. I'm 33.
Yeah, but like so daily showering is not particularly normal. Like worldwide, people aren't doing that.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. So what I'm asking here is, first, is this actually a problem? If it's actually a problem, then I think you got secondary things.
Are there health issues?
Yeah. Is he got health problems? Is he getting sores? Is he gross? If he's not gross, then what do you care?
I don't know, man. Even if you're going to hold off on running the syrup, I feel like you got to change your grundos every once in a while.
Maybe he's not even wearing any.
He's commandos.
<Isn't> better.
Now wait a minute. Are you saying he strolls the round in his house in the Lord's good beauty?
No, he's just in the grape colored Fruit of the Looms, walking around in sweatpants all day.
Chino Commando. I think that's what he does.
Chino Commando is the worst thing ever.
If he was running all natural at his own place for 3 weeks, I'd say he's probably pretty clean.
Yeah.
I
might be the only one here that just disagrees.
Who's around this guy? Like, what,
seems like his daughter.
Yeah, hold on. What was the who's complaining?
This
really?
Is friend of daughter, whose elderly dad rarely bathes or changes his clothes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You think she's being like, is she there all the time? Maybe he just has eight pairs of the same thing.
It's enough of a problem that she's telling her friend about it, and her friend is emailing us.
Yeah. They said he said one of the see this is where I find this hard to believe though, because it said even when he does shower, it's only a 5-minute shower about every 3 weeks. I the 5 minutes is not a problem. You can get in and get out in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Agree with that. Yeah, there's a level of you need to take this in with who's saying the thing.
And 3 weeks doesn't equal twice a month.
Yeah, it's 2 weeks.
Yeah, there's a lot of discrepancies in the story. He probably smells great.
Yeah.
He probably showers all the time.
There is a leap
she's
to
just,
be had
she's just
between
jealous.
He probably yeah. smells great and, I mean, you're overreacting.
Yeah, she's jelly.
Why are you?
For sure.
She's, yes. We are to take this and go, our advice is, shut up, jealous.
Okay.
You wish you could only bathe every 3 weeks.
What's the least amount you could take a shower in like, the amount of time? What do you demand has to happen?
I'm apparently the wrong person to ask in this room because I shower twice a day.
No. Yep.
Agreed. Which goes, I was anticipating no. that you were going to objectively say no.
No.
Are you disagreeing that I shower twice a day?
No, I think
or are you
do.
Saying that's too much?
No, I think that's perverse.
I'm pretty sure it was in Deuteronomy that's wrong.
The good Lord has blessed yeah. me in a way in which I can afford 2 showers a day. And I'm good. I'm a
That's
keep
how
taking.
Moses hit the rock. He was trying to hit the guy that was showering every day right in front of him.
It's a flaunting of your wealth and privilege.
It's a flaunting of your wealth.
Yeah. Hello, everybody. I'm super clean.
Don't pay a water bill. 2 showers a day.
I don't I, like. I would say. Well, I don't know. Once a week.
Once a week for an old person.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that like not a lot of activity. Maybe. It's enough to like because I mean you can get a sit funk. You can be hanging around and your crevices. Your
you
crevices
get a little greasy.
Oh no! You can get a sit funk and in your crevices happening within 5 seconds of each other are awful, Ben. That is just wrong. If you'd like to let us know what you think about Ben saying those things,
what?
You should let us know on the Live for the Path complaint line.
You said
515-517-0085.
You said Noah's Garden. That's what
Call
you said.
Or did.
You did say Noah's Garden.
I said Noah's Vineyard, first yeah. off.
Okay, it's same
second
problem.
Off, I think Noah's Wines would be a hysterical vineyard name.
Yeah. Real shady stuff
why
happened
his wife and his son are having troubles in the back.
Yeah. Maybe it's not the greatest choice, but it's better than
back
you
to
get
the...
a sit funk in your crevices.
I
and the medical opinion of the gentlemen in this room, two of which look like roadkill, are the ones who are willing to say, I bet you could shower once a week and
you
it's
don't,
fine.
You don't look like roadkill. That's unnecessarily harsh at yourself.
I mean, that's fair, and I appreciate that critique. However.
In either case. Okay, let's presume there's a problem. A week is right. Twice a day is a privilege.
She didn't mention any health problems or any like when if I was going to try to make an argument that somebody should shower more often,
sure.
Like I would have brought it up. Like, hey man, he's got sores, he's got boils, he's got a fruit loop
yeah,
up to his butt cheek.
You would
cheek.
Say that.
Yeah, the person is not being altruistic and going like because it sounds like she feels bad for her friend, not feels bad for the elderly gentleman who's only showering once every 3 weeks. Like, she's saying, what can my friend do to eliminate this problem? Because they're probably offended by the sit funk.
Are they helping him shower?
Probably not.
Okay. So, all right. So, let's. There's two avenues. We're going to answer these two avenues. Avenue one, he's it's to his detriment.
Yes.
There are things. It's not good for his health. He actually does stink pretty bad. He doesn't seem to notice it
yep.
or is not motivated to do much about it.
Right.
What's the advice on that one?
I can't even imagine having a conversation with my elderly father that says, hey, Dad, like, I know life is tough sometimes, and I know that you're getting along in your years, and it probably is just a total pain, and you have nothing to prove to anybody or impress anybody. But, like, for your health and your safety, we need to talk about your hygiene. I don't know if I would ever have that conversation.
I would say put it on a calendar.
Or if I would bring it to a doctor.
He's probably just, if he's retired... He didn't know if it's Monday or 8 or Saturday. I mean, it's just like, so put it in your calendar, have
you
it beep,
he just
you have a phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been
just
out in
do
the
some
garage
reminder.
Working well, on his derby cars. Because
to Dan's point, he can do it.
Yeah.
He is doing it.
It yeah. seems like it once every 3 weeks, yeah, yeah, for 5 minutes.
So,
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, be doing courtesy. Hey, Dad.
He probably didn't even know it's not doing it often.
Yeah. At first glance, yeah, absolutely. I think that's a fair conversation to have at first.
I think we talked about, or they said that they do have this conversation, and they just won't do it. Is that?
Oh, I don't remember that part.
The dad just won't do it.
Yeah, he just won't. She's tried nagging. She's tried bribing.
Oh,
she's tried
that's
making,
right. Yep.
Yeah.
Do you think it would change if they offered like home care, or you know every
spitz bath
if someone
for the nurse
yeah someone
stuff,
come right? in and do like a rag bath or something like that?
I mean maybe.
What if you told them like, hey, look, you don't have to get all up in the shower, but like here's a package of wet wipes, and you need to do some maintenance every couple
get the
three days.
Dude wipes from the Sam's Club.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Dad, take care of that sit funk. Tired of it.
Yeah. I mean, he could be.
Here's a pack of wipes.
He could be initially embarrassed about it and then stubborn. Right. He doesn't have to be stubborn first. He could have just like, so that's fact that someone mentioned it. Now you got to play off like it's okay because it's hurting his pride. So you also like could maybe it depends, you know, if you could use somebody else. Somebody else, he might take it differently. You're right, Mike, from someone who's not his daughter or something. I mean, who knows if he's got any friends anymore, but like Chuck from the church came by and go, you know what, Fred?
Yeah, it stinks like butt in here.
It's too rank, Frank.
Yeah, we noticed that the potluck that someone brought kibasi and some cabbage in there, and we weren't sure if it was you or the crock pot.
Yeah. Gross.
You smell like Ellis Island, sir. You gotta do something different.
Yeah, I like Dan's idea. I think you just put it on the calendar, make it not a public spectacle, and like say, just remind him to do it. And then if that's not working, then you know, offer to get him some help or you know, whatever. I think the more that people you involve and the more you make it look like he can't take care of himself, the more he just gets ashamed and embarrassed, and then ends up trying to defend a thing he didn't believe in the first place.
Yeah.
I'm just sitting at the end of my seat waiting for what Secular has to say about this one.
Yeah, let's have it.
And how much we disagree with it.
Oh, wait, what was the second option was it's actually not causing him a problem?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's causing the daughter a problem, not the dad.
But if he doesn't stink and he's not hurt, maybe you just...
It just doesn't feel right that he
belongs
in
Belgium, where this is acceptable.
Yeah, we quit talking about it. Like,
yeah.
What's the problem here?
And you're the friend of the daughter, not even the daughter. Shut up.
Yeah. This is triple hot goss. It's coming from too far out.
Yeah, the tea is spilled. You ready?
Yeah.
I hope so. Oh, boy.
Secular says, sometimes as people age, their olfactory sense diminishes. Was your friend's aging father always this way, or this is relatively new behavior? If it's new and he has a doctor, he may need to be neurologically evaluated. If more is going on and he can no longer take care of himself, i.e. do laundry, clean his home, etc., someone should do it for him on a regular basis. If he refuses to allow that, suggest she visit with him in well-ventilated surroundings. Hey, Dad, let's go outside.
Can you turn on a fan?
You need just vocational help. Not vocational, sorry. Like, go help in your home. Or, hey, let's go outside and let's meet by the oak tree, Dad.
That's, I would have expected her to mention he also has, if those other problems existed. Like, he doesn't do his laundry. He doesn't keep up after himself anymore.
Yeah.
Like, that, a broad pattern of he's having trouble to care for himself would be common.
Yes, right.
Uh-huh. And a very, you know, like a kind of a normal conversation. But if everything else is fine.
True.
And he just don't want to shower, but every 3 weeks, and it's not harming him. Yeah, I think Steve's got a nail. Like, yeah. let's let this thing go.
It would appear as though his olfactory senses seem to be failing. That happens in old age.
His sniffer's a quitter. That's what you got to say.
Sniffer's a quitter.
Yeah, I feel like we kind of in a weird way had said the same thing as Secular here.
Yeah.
If it's a problem, do something about it. If it's not a problem, go outside. Shut up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I can imagine a thing where this is not actually a big deal. I think he's just living his days out, and he doesn't have a whole lot going on. And it's possible he don't actually smell his own brand of waft anyway. And so he just thinks everything's on the cool. There's no reason to disrupt his everyday schedule to run a shower.
Just taking in the statements back to back. He doesn't even notice his old brand of waft. He's just sitting in the cool.
All right, you've been listening to Life in the
Past. Dude from 1965.
Here's the thing. I want this man's life.
That's the whole time you're talking about this, I'm sitting here like, everything that is what is Mike saying, I'm not surprised at by any means. He's like, 3 weeks ain't bad. 5 minutes every 3 weeks? Oh, I wish I could live that life.
I wish
I got too many ladies at home telling me I got a shower.
I just want to be me.
You don't like the way I smell? Go hang out with the animals.
You've been listening to Live from the Bath. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight. We very much appreciate it. Steve, thanks for being in the studio tonight.
I'm so happy to be here.
Here we go. We were lucky. You bailed us out on a couple of those advice things. We sucked up all the air in the room, Bova. Mike's right. We got to dial it back. You specifically. And if you got anything for us on the old complaint line, 515-517-0085, call or text. We'd love to hear from you if you got a complaint about the show. Hey, listen here. The Life from the Path merchandise has been flowing out, and people are enjoying it. These are quality, semi-quality goods. They're not cut-rate prices, but, like, again, we're making pennies here.
I just want to make sure you're referring to the order that I placed yesterday.
What did you buy?
Two couple shirts.
No, I didn't see that.
Did you get me one?
No.
Schmuck.
No, but they are flying out the door. I'm coming for that paddleball set. It's expensive. Or pickleball. They got a pickleball with the war donkey on it. Hey, Mike, did you brew the War Donkey coffee?
No, I left it intact.
Oh, someone's got to try it, see if it's any good.
All right.
Anyway, that's all we got. Go to lifefromthepath.org, and you can click a link there that to get to the shop, and you can pick up your Life from the Path wares, and you don't have to wear it out and about, you know? You can just wear it to sleep at night or something like that if you're embarrassed. I understand. But, yeah, if you're going to pick a ball, everyone's going to know. Anyway, thanks for hanging out with us.
Take a shower.
This week. We'll see if we got a show for you next week. In the meantime, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.